Moncrief on News Talk. From the heinous to the ridiculous. This is Moncrief's Murder Club.
Yes, it's Wednesday, so that means Moncrief's Murder Club. I'm joined this week, as we are every week, by Cassie Delaney, who's going to open the Murder Club, or let us enter the Murder Club. And this week she's going to be talking about kind of people we work with and the very strange things some of our colleagues might get up to. Cassie, how are you?
I'm good, John. How are you?
I'm not too bad. So take us to Maryland, if you would.
Yeah, so this week, I just want to talk about sometimes when colleagues might be driven to murder or kind of help you get one across the line. And the first one is a very, very odd case in Maryland. This is a wealthy little suburb outside of Washington, D.C., and we're in quite a well-known shopping strip. Think of like yoga studios, cafes, and there is a Lululemon, which for those who know is like the pinnacle of sportswear.
And very expensive sportswear. Sorry to interrupt you, but I have an 11-year-old daughter. Anyway, please continue.
Very expensive. So it's Friday, the 11th of March, 2011, and two of the Lululemon employees are closing up the shop. Jana Murray is 30. She's from Texas. She's an engineering degree and she's halfway through master's degrees at once. She runs marathons. She works in retail on the side because that's what you do when you're 30 and getting your degrees. And everyone who knows her describes her as warm and sunny. Then we have a woman called Brittany. She's 28. She's a former college soccer player, one of a big family, really well liked and very good at the job. The two girls you'd absolutely expect to see working in a Lululemon. Okay. But earlier that evening, something really small has happened, right? Jana noticed that a pair of leggings are missing. So she flags it with her supervisor in the store. And her manager asked her to go check Brittany's bag on the way out, which is standard procedure, nothing out of the ordinary here. But she finds the leggings and another item of clothing in Jana's bag or Brittany's bag. And Brittany says she might have just put them in there by accident. They all leave. But then Brittany rings Jana to say that she's left her wallet in the shop. And Jana, being a dutiful employee, says she'll turn around and let her back in. But that is the last time anyone speaks to Jana Murray. Oh, so the next morning, the manager opens up and finds her dead in the back of the store. And then she finds Brittany alive, tied up, hands and feet bound in a toilet cubicle. She's been badly beaten and she's pretty hysterical. So she tells the police that two masked men followed them into the shop after closing, that the men tied them both up, assaulted them, and she heard them killing Jana and could do nothing about it. So sounds like horrendous crime. Maybe something you'd expect in an expensive store that would hold a lot of cash. Mm. So for about a day and a half, this story is grand. People lose the run of themselves. It's a town where people leave their doors open and two men walking into the shops to do this is heinous. People are concerned. Parents are off collecting their kids from work early. And the police are looking for two masked men. But of course, these men do not exist.
Okay. Is this heading where we all think it's heading?
Yeah, it is, unfortunately. And it's all unraveled by the Apple store next door. So the Apple store. I know, you couldn't write it.
So Lululemon to Apple. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. The Apple staff next door had been out the back doing stock late that night. And through the plasterboard, two of them heard the commotion. So they heard thumping. They heard a woman screaming for help, pleading and saying things like, please talk to me and God help me. And then they heard a second woman's voice, crucially, staying calm, but saying something to the effect of be quiet or shut up. And crucially, it's two women and not two men. Wow. But they didn't ring anyone at the time. They went and checked the front of the Lululemon. They saw the lights were off and nothing looked wrong. So they went back to work to do their job. They assumed it was just a row or a telly or someone was messing. So they kind of stayed out of it until the next day. And then the physical evidence started to arrive and that was overwhelming. So Jana Murray had been attacked with something in the region of six different implements taken from around the shop and stockroom. There was a hammer, a wrench, a knife, a rope, a mallet. And she actually had 300 separate wounds. So the medical examiner talked about how long it must have taken. Like, this is not a kind of easy struggle. This is something that probably went on real torturous most of the night. And then you have Brittany, by contrast, who has very superficial injuries. So just some of the cuts on her hands were the kind you'd get when you slip when you're holding a blade or something like that. The bindings on her wrists were also tied in a way that you could achieve yourself and crucially kind of get out of. So it didn't look too convincing. There were bloody shoe prints throughout the shop, made by a large man's shoe size 14. But those shoes had been taken from the stockroom and actually put on the wrong feet. And crucially, these prints only existed inside the crime scene. There was no bloody footprints outside. So no trail of them coming in and none of them leaving afterwards.
So whoever's size 14 shoes those were, they had purposely taken them off a shelf and put them on their much smaller feet.
Exactly. And on the wrong feet, which is a detail you kind of funny to overlook.
Yeah.
The back door was locked with a key from the outside and only the staff had keys. And when the manager arrived, it was locked. So it was as though, if the two masked men was to be believed, it was as though they had secured the premises and locked it on their way out. And Jana's car as well had been moved and driven, parked up the road. So all fingers very quickly pointed to Brittany, and she was charged with first degree murder. Her defense tried her for second degree, arguing that there was no premeditation, that it was just a fight that had spiraled out of control. But the prosecution pointed out the six weapons and the length of the attack and the fact that at some stage she had tried to kind of cover it up and that hours went by during this. So the jury only deliberated for about an hour. And she was given life without parole.
Good heavens. And do we know what her beef was?
I mean, it was all over the pair of leggings.
Good
it was
heavens.
All over, yeah. It was all over getting kind of ratted out for stealing a pair of Lululemon leggings. Now, they're expensive, but I don't know if they're worth life in prison.
Indeed. And I forget the year, but I presume Brittany is still very much in prison as things stand.
Very much in prison. We were only in 2011, so she's probably only really settling in at this stage.
Indeed, indeed. Okay, fascinating and horrific stuff in equal measure. We move next to Los Angeles earlier than that in 1986. What's going on in your second case?
In 1986, we have someone who kind of, her benefit of work is that she knows the inside scoop and knows how operations work. This is a really tragic story. A woman at the center of this is called Sherry Rossman, and she's 29 years of age. She is a very talented and very good nurse. She actually becomes the director of critical care nursing at the age of 27, which is incredibly unheard of. She's just someone who's very dutiful and progressing through her career very quickly, very well liked. And she, at the age of 29, is just married to this man called John Rutan. Now, on the 24th of February, she stays home from work because she has a sore back. John goes into his office, and when he comes home that evening, the front door is open and the living room is wrecked. The stereo had been unplugged as though something had disturbed her when she was putting on the radio. So his wife is on the floor. She has been beaten. There are signs of a serious fight. There is crucially a bite mark on her arm, and she's been shot three times in the chest through a blanket to muffle the sound. Her BMW car is gone. So the LAPD pick up this case and they call it a robbery gone wrong. There's been a couple of break-ins in the area, and for all intents and purposes, this case is effectively closed. They don't catch anyone. They just leave the case sitting there for 23 years.
Wow.
But the problem here is that Sherry's parents, Nels and Loretta, spend more than two decades saying that this is not a robbery, that their daughter had told them she was being harassed by a woman. The woman was an ex-girlfriend of John's from his UCLA days, who had not really accepted that he'd moved on and gotten married. She'd actually shown up at the hospital where Sherry worked to confront her in uniform. So that woman, Stephanie Lazarus, but the real key detail here is that she's an LAPD officer.
Oh, good heavens.
So she knows the inside scoop. She knows how things work. And while the parents are raising their concerns, detectives are kind of telling them to be quiet, leave the police work to the police. And Stephanie's name goes into a file, but it's kind of ignored and left there. And she goes on and has an entire successful career. She actually makes detective. She gets married. She adopts a child. At one point, she's moved to work in art theft, which is kind of the most glamorous part of the LAPD. So she's really successful. And the thing is, in 1986, there's no real DNA procedures that are worth talking about. But somebody at the heart of this story, when investigating the crime scene, decides to swab that bite mark on the arm and then puts the swab in a freezer and leaves it there for years. So we get to 2009. So think about that. That's been left in there for 25 years, untouched. And a cold case unit finds it, sends the swab off when obviously we've got more improved DNA testing. Mm. And the result comes back that the DNA on the swab is female. So this blows up the entire original concept that it could have been a robbery gone wrong. There's two masked men who'd come into the house and taken control. But what happens then is a really extraordinary internal problem, in that there's a really small group of detectives here now who have armed with the information that Stephanie's name is on a file somewhere and that this swab has pulled out female DNA. They don't want to make a big deal of this story, especially when they're kind of, you know, working alongside each other.
Yeah. And so is there any implication in what you're saying? And we want to be careful, but, you know, they're 3,000 miles away, the LAPD, or further than that, that there was an attempt to cover stuff up for 22 years?
See, this is it. It's really like line duty kind of stuff, isn't it? Mm. It's bad copper stuff here, which must be really exciting, but I imagine very scary, because if you can't trust the people you work with,
sure,
you know, you're going to be... you're
particularly in this line of work.
Yeah, you want to proceed here with caution. So what they do is they put Stephanie under surveillance and they follow her to a kind of Costco, watch her drink a cup of coffee and then put the cup in the bin. And then they take the cup with the straw and test that DNA, and it matches the DNA found in the swab from the bite mark.
Wow.
So, like, really interestingly, her name had been sitting in the department's own paperwork the entire time. So, and interestingly here, 13 days after the murder, Stephanie Lazarus had reported that her 38mm revolver had been stolen from her car. Sherry had been shot with a 38mm revolver. So there were a lot of signs and a lot of evidence pointing to Stephanie. They do arrest her and they ask her to come down to an interview room in the jail, which is one part of the building where a police officer has to surrender their weapon at the door. And the interview tape here is remarkable. When she's asked about John, she's really casual, chatty, says she can't quite remember. But there's a moment, a kind of click in the moment in the tapes here where she realizes that she's been caught. It takes 20 odd years to convict her. But in 2012, she is finally sentenced to 27 years in life. By that time, she's 51 years of age.
Wow. Okay. Mm. Good heavens. That's baffling. That really is.
Isn't it?
Listen, we don't have much time, but I do want to quickly move to San Diego. And in 3 minutes, can you quickly tell me case three you've selected today?
I'll blast through this. So this is the case of a man called Greg DeVillers, and he is found dead in his bed, 26. Really weird staging, right? We're in 2000, which kind of gives a little bit of context.
Yeah.
Rose petals are scattered all over him and he's holding his wedding photograph. His wife calls in 911, says that her husband has been depressed and that the marriage is in trouble. Her name is Kirsten Rossum. She's 24 and she, crucially, is the county medical examiner and she works in the toxicology department. So his body should be sent over for her to examine. Obviously, they can't do that because of the conflict of interest. It's sent elsewhere. It's discovered that he died of fentanyl poisoning along with other drugs in his system. But basically, it comes down to the fact that Kirsten Rossum, she herself had a meth problem when she was younger. She lied about this to get her job in the examiner's office. And when she got there, she met another man called Michael. They began an affair. Together, they robbed the drugs from the mortuary and poisoned poor Craig and killed him in his own home.
Oh, dear. Good heavens. Yeah. Does Sean just say that to you every week? Good heavens. These are fascinating.
He gasps an awful lot.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine. That is fascinating and horrific, as I say, in equal measure. It's a compliment to how well you tell the stories that I gave you so little time, Cassie, because I was transfixed by everything you had to say, despite my constant interruptions. That is Cassie Delaney, who brings us the Moncrief Murder Club each Wednesday. Thank you for that, Cassie.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.